Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi and thank you for joining me, Mike Dilk, on the Relax Back UK show. First guest is consultant surgeon Mr. Simon Marsh.
And a quarter of men, by the time you get to the age of 70, will have a hernia. So, you know, very common. And as we discussed previously, you know, we're doing 100,000 hernia repairs a year. Seems to be a bit less now since the COVID pandemic.
We talk about hernias, what they are, how common they are, what to do about them, and also why surgeons in the UK revert to being a mister from when they're a doctor. All kinds of things we chat about. My next guest is Suman Gujral. She's an artist, poet and storyteller and has recently created Third Space Stories, which involves an anthology of poems from people of South Asian origins, a poem workshop, all kinds of things. We also talk about what poetry has meant to her, does mean to her, and how it helps her, and also many other people.
I think poetry is a great way of processing things and explaining how you feel about things. And a lot of the poets I've spoken to have used it like that. And a lot of the poems that have been submitted to Third Space Stories, you know, people talk about their experiences and how they feel.
So please do stay tuned for a fantastic show. Thank you. Simon Marsh is a consultant surgeon, and my first question to him was, does he have a specialism?
I spend my time doing a couple of things, half of which is hernias. So I'm, if you like, what you'd term a good old-fashioned general surgeon. So throughout my training, I've done a bit of everything. And as you get, well, let's say less young, you end up picking a couple of things that you enjoy doing and people telling you you're good at, and that's what you do. So I spend half of my time dealing mainly with ladies and breast cancer problems. And in contrast to that, the other half is with men, and mostly men who get hernias. Because about a quarter of men, by the time you get to 70, are going to have had a hernia. So that's a lot of men.
That is a big number. Before we get into that, let me ask a question that is, it's not meant to be flippant. I genuinely want to know, when doctors become surgeons in this country, they revert back to being a mister. Why is that? What's going on?
It is sort of Middle Ages history. Now, bear with me. So in the old days, doctors were physicians who stood at the end of the bed and made pronouncements about, for example, bloodletting or putting leeches on people, but wouldn't touch the patients. Then you had the barber surgeons who would touch people and spend a lot of the time, for example, amputating limbs that got infected with gangrene. That's what they did. Now come, and there's a bit of debate about this, but it probably relates to the English Civil War, when there are a whole load of people getting injured on the battlefield, and the barber surgeons would wade in and save a lot of lives by amputating infected limbs. And because of that, the physicians rather begrudgingly announced that they would allow the barber surgeons to become doctors, at which point the barber surgeons thumbed their nose at the physicians and said, no thanks, we're going to stay as misters. But you're right, it is the only country in the world where consultant doctor surgeons are called mister. If you try and explain that to somebody in America, they won't understand at all. Okay, but it's one of these strange things of English history, you're right.
Yeah, nice, I like it. Some people in the States will hear this, so we can confuse them, so that's good.
I'm glad.
Well, thank you for that. We should maybe get on with the topic in hand, hernias. So like the most basic thing that I'm going to ask, to start, basic question, what actually is a hernia? Because everyone has heard of hernias, but I suspect not everyone really knows quite what they are. And I think I'm included in that.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to my medical school days in Cambridge in the 1980s, when we were taught the definition of a hernia. So bear with me if you would. So the definition of a hernia is the protrusion of part or all of a viscus through the wall of the cavity that normally contains that viscus. Now, that's the medical definition. A viscus is any part of your body. So, for example, you can get a hernia of the lens of your eye, which can slip out of the capsule of the lens and go upwards or downwards. You can get a hernia of your stomach that comes up through your diaphragm. That's called a hiatus hernia. I expect most people have heard of that. You can get hernias in your muscle. If the tissue on the surface of the muscle splits, the muscle can come through that. But what most people mean by a hernia in general is what we call an inguinal or a groin hernia, which is where you get a lump in the groin. And 98% of those will occur in men, 2% in ladies. And as we've said, a quarter of men are going to get one of those by the time they're 70.
Okay. And so the ones that are more common, is that from a bit of gut sort of sticking out through the gut wall?
Yeah, now it's normally actually a bit of fatty tissue. We all have this sheet of fatty tissue called the omentum that sort of lines the tummy and the bowels on the inside. And most of the time, it's going to be a bit of that that comes through and causes the lump. But you're absolutely right. If you have a hernia for a long time and it gets a bit bigger and the hole that everything comes through gets a bit bigger, you can get bowel coming through into it. And that's potentially when you can get into some of the rare but more serious complications of having hernias.
All right. So you can, from what you just said then, you can have a hernia for quite a long time and it not necessarily hurt or be a problem.
You can.
Question than a statement.
Yeah, you can. And there's a thing about, I mean, particularly in the NHS, there's a thing about not operating on what they call small asymptomatic hernias, so small hernias that cause no symptoms. And it is unfortunately one of those things, and nobody likes the R word, but it is one of those things the NHS has been rationing even before COVID days. Before then, we were doing on the NHS about perhaps 100,000 hernia operations a year. So it's the most common operation that a general surgeon does. Interesting, the latest figure I saw from 2022 suggests that's dropped to 20,000. So there are a lot of people out there not having hernias operated upon. And if you have a small asymptomatic one, yeah, you can put up with it, leave it, get on with life. But the trouble with a small asymptomatic hernia is that when you leave it, eventually it will become a bigger hernia that causes symptoms, be it discomfort or pain, or, as we said, very rarely, some of the more dangerous complications.
Okay. So if someone has one of these small hernias that, you know, they might be on a waiting list or it might not need seen to immediately, what kind of symptoms are they going to have? Will they have a lump in their sort of stomach area or a bit lower?
Yeah, it's usually a lump lower down, you're right. Now, what I tend to find is quite a lot of chaps when they come and see me, because we said it's mostly men, they talk about a phase when they get a bit of an ache low down in the groin. It's a bit achy, but they can't feel anything. And then interestingly, the ache seems to go away. And what they notice is they get up in the morning, everything's fine. They're walking around, perhaps in the evening, they're going for a shower, getting ready for bed, and they look down, and they go, oh, there's a lump. And then when they lie down, it goes back again. But that's the stage when it doesn't seem to cause any symptoms. And what happens, it seems, is when a hernia first appears, the muscles in the groin area have to split. So that's why you get a bit of discomfort. And then once you've got the hole, that's when the hernia comes through, and it tends not to be as uncomfortable. Now, having said that, if you leave it, it can get uncomfortable. If people are doing heavy manual work, it's going to affect their work and so on. So it's different for everybody. But I'm quite relaxed about repairing hernias in terms of ones that cause no trouble, and it can be done when somebody's ready to have it done. And there is no other way of fixing a hernia. Physiotherapy doesn't work. If you've got a hernia, the only way to get rid of it is to have an operation.
Oh, really? You can't kind of push it back in without making a
hole? Yeah, it'll always come back.
All right, okay. So you have got to have an operation to fix it properly.
So you're right, and what we're talking about there is what we call a reducible hernia. So you see a lump when you're standing up. When you lie down, it disappears again. And sometimes you push it and squeeze it back, and you might hear a bit of gurgling with it as well, but it goes back, and that's called a reducible hernia. So that's the commonest sort.
Okay. All right. I suppose in some instances, because having an operation, even if it's an operation which is, you know, done 100,000 a year or something, very common, and you do a couple before breakfast kind of deal, and you're very used to them, any operation has risks. So if you can avoid one, is that a good... I mean, there's a balance here.
There is. You're right, any operation we do, however straightforward, has potential complications. So anybody who comes to see me here at 1 Week Harley Street will get a whole list of things that might happen, most of which don't. But, you know, they're common things. You get a scar. It's sore. I've had surgery. It all hurts. All operations hurt. Wound infection is very uncommon, but it can happen. You can get problems very rarely with the blood supply to the testicles. I mean, that's really rare, excuse me, but that can happen as well. Hernias can come back. Again, very uncommon, but you can get recurrent hernias. So all those things people will get information about before they have an operation. You're right, it's a balance, but most of the time it's straightforward. But unfortunately, if you're one of those people who gets a really rare complication, to you, it's not rare because it's happened.
Yeah,
and you're absolutely right. Any operation we do has a range of potential complications, which you have to balance up against the symptoms that you're getting from the hernia.
Okay. Right, let's put that to one side. Earlier in the discussion, you were saying how actually that they're very common. Just how common are they?
Yeah, so the 98% of the inguinal hernias will occur in men, and a quarter of men, by the time you get to the age of 70, will have a hernia. So, you know, very common. And as we discussed previously, you know, we're doing 100,000 hernia repairs a year. Seems to be a bit less now since the COVID pandemic. The NHS is still struggling, and there's no way around that. It did exactly the right thing during the pandemic, and I still spend half my time working in the NHS, so I know. But there are lots of people out there who are not having hernias fixed at the moment, but there's a lot of them about.
Okay. Now, are some people more likely to get them than others? Is it anything to do with, you know, if you're out of shape, not so fit, or do men get them more often because we tend to be a bit fatter and a bit less fit? You know, or is it just bad luck?
Do you know, that's a really good question. Now, this is one of those things where I'm perhaps going to be a little bit politically incorrect because, and I have to say this, men and women are different. And the anatomy of the groin in men and women is different. So in men, we have, and I hope I can say this, we have testicles and you have what's called the spermatic cord, which is quite a large structure which runs through the muscles of your tummy. And therefore, there's a much larger hole in men. So there is a weakness in men.
Right.
Women have a much smaller
structure. Poor design.
Yeah, poor evolution. Yeah, we're very badly evolved. Yeah. Women do have a structure that runs through it, but it's called the round ligament in the uterus. It's really small. And that's why inguinal hernias are less common in women. They don't have this innate weakness that men have. Right. Now, there'll be a small number of people I see who will say something like, you know, I was putting the lawn around the back of the car, my leg slipped and I hurt my groin, and the next day there was a lump. But in most people, there isn't a particular event that causes it. And, you know, I probably think most hernias are built in. They're probably going to happen at some point. So if you like, it's deep down in your genes. Perhaps you just don't repair your tissues as well and you're going to get a hernia. There probably isn't anything you can do about it. 90% of chaps I see only get one on one side, but 10% will get them on both sides, sometimes at the same time, usually a few years later. But I think a lot of it is programmed in deeply down in the genes that we don't really understand, but it's just one of those things that's going to happen, and there's probably not much you can do about it.
That's a shame, because my next question was going to be, are there any exercises or lifestyle things we can do to kind of help us not have to put up with this?
And you're right, you don't want to be overweight. Smoking, interestingly, does increase the number of people who get hernias, not because they cough, but because smoking somehow affects the enzymes in the body that what we call remodel the tissues. So, for example, and again, bear with me, if I ask you how old you were, the answer is you're probably about 5 years old, because every cell in your body has been regenerated and remodeled over the last 5 years. And if you smoke, your body's not so good at that, so the tissues are weaker. So don't smoke, don't be overweight. And yes, you're right, you can do exercise and you focus particularly on the core muscles. And most people have heard of core stability exercise. And we've got a specific set of exercises that we give out here to people to do that might reduce your risk of getting one. But what I don't like is actually for people to come along and say, it's my fault, I've got a hernia. Say, no, it's not your fault, it's just happened. But there are things you can do to reduce the risk. You're right, there are.
Are there some things that you can do to maybe increase the risk? So here, asking for a friend. Okay, not me, okay. Not me at all. I'm 58. Sometimes I do exercise like I'm sort of still 20. I think that's a problem. And the latest thing I've been doing, only for a few weeks now, is skipping. Doing a bit of like 10 minutes skipping or something in the morning, which actually I kind of like. But I have, you know, it's changed my routine of going to the loo. You know, things are moving around down there because this constant jarring. I've noticed I need to wear some tighter underwear when I'm skipping. Otherwise, I think, oh, you know what? I can feel that. Could this have anything to do with, or could this bring on a hernia? I mean, I haven't got any pain, or I'm not worried about getting a hernia. But, you know, is that sort of a story you might hear?
It might be, but, you know, I'd rather that you went skipping and did some exercise rather than not, to be honest. And as I think there are plenty of fit people who get hernias, and they just get them. And I think it probably is just one of those things, the majority of chaps. So don't smoke and exercise and keep yourself fit. Far more important than worrying about whether you get a hernia or not.
Okay, all right. Say if we've been unlucky and we've got a hernia, we've been to see our GP and he says, right, you need to go and see Simon. And you said, right, we're going to do an operation. Kind of what's the process? What's next? Do I pop in one afternoon for half an hour, or, you know, is it a bit more serious?
No, it's usually relatively straightforward in that you come and see me. Hernias are usually really obvious when you examine somebody, so you usually don't need scans or any sort of imaging tests. It's usually fairly obvious. But then it's a matter of talking about which way you fix it, because there are different ways of fixing hernias. And I think the first thing to say is that whichever way people have their hernia fixed, most people are absolutely fine. And the main ways of fixing it, you can do it from the front. So you call that an open hernia repair. So you're going from the front with a little incision. Or you can do it with the telescope for laparoscopic.
From the front, be a little more specific.
Yeah, so you have a scar in your groin low down. So sort of right over where the lump is, that right might be a couple of inches. And what you do, you will go in through the muscles, you find the hernia, you push it back through the hole, and then you repair the muscles to close the hole. And there are a couple of basic ways you can do that, one of which involves a plastic mesh or a patch. And I'm sure people have heard about meshes and hernia repairs and so on. And
about meshes. They've been a lot recently, but for women, and it's been a real problem.
Yeah. Yes. So that's why people are aware of meshes, and people wonder about whether they can cause problems in hernias as well. As I say, most people who have a hernia done, will be fine. Some people, because of that, simply don't want foreign bodies, plastic, implanted in their body, and that's fine. And I'm one of the few people now who will fix hernias, if you like, in the traditional way, without any plastic or meshes at all. So my specialty is do what we call a sutured anatomical repair, where every layer in the groin is repaired to make it a little bit stronger. No plastic, no meshes. The stitches all eventually dissolve. So what you're left with is all your muscles in the right place, no hernia. And then one of the really important things is to strengthen muscles afterwards to reduce the chance of anything coming back. But you can just put a plastic patch over the hole and then sew it up. Right. You can also do it from the inside, laparoscopically, it's called, with telescopes, and that will always involve putting a big mesh on. Okay. So those are the basic ways of doing it. So in the vast majority of cases, whichever way you have it done, no problem. Increasingly, you're right, people have heard about the problem with meshes in women. They don't want meshes, and it's entirely reasonable to fix a hernia without any mesh whatsoever.
Yeah.
I work with a team of people here at 108 Harley, so we can offer whichever technique people would like. Simple as that.
You mentioned you're one of the few surgeons that can sew it all up and not use the mesh.
Yeah.
Is that because you're particularly patient or particularly good at it? Or dare I say, of an older generation?
Yeah, I'm over 21, and that's how I learned to do it. So you'll often hear it described as the shoulder ice technique. Now, the shoulder ice clinic in Toronto was set up after the Second World War to enable young men with hernias to have their hernias fixed. They could be drafted into the forces. I'm sure they're all very grateful. And it became known as the hernia factory. They would just process hernias. And they developed this, what we call anatomical layered technique for fixing all the muscles. Now, their original technique, you actually involved a metal wire to repair the hernias. Obviously, we don't use that anymore. And I used to meet up fairly regularly in conferences around Europe with a chap called Robert Ben-David, who used to run it, who sadly died just before COVID, Robert. And we used to meet up and talk about the pros and cons of meshes and how you can avoid them if you can, and how better it is just to do an anatomical technique like we used to do. And that's how I was trained to do it. And the reason the mesh technique came in, and it came in the NHS in the UK in the mid-90s, was because it was felt to be an easier technique for an inexperienced surgeon. Because in those days, the hernia repairs in the NHS were done by what were called surgical registrars. So the surgeons in training, consultants didn't do hernias, they left it to their juniors. And it was felt to be an easier technique for the trainee surgeons to do. So that's why it came in. It was so...
Yeah, see one, do one, teach one.
And that's exactly what it was, yeah. And in those days, it was sold of, you know, quicker technique, quicker recovery, less recurrence, so on. None of that is actually true. So whichever technique you use for fixing hernias, all of those things are going to be about the same. And it's probably more important that you pick somebody who's done a few thousand than the actual technique you use. All right. So if people want to come along and have one without a mesh, I can do that for them. If you want a laparoscopic one, I've got a colleague who'll do that. If they want the mesh one, I've got a colleague who'll do that. And it's a matter of giving people choice.
Sure. So the laparoscopic one, is that keyhole surgery?
Correct. That's right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
If you're going for keyhole surgery, do you have to have the mesh for that one?
You do. That's always done with a mesh. And but the only thing...
Sorry,
anything I know about there. Yeah, that's right. The only thing I know about the keyhole surgery, which is sold as good, has very small scars. But in fact, the operation you're doing on the inside is probably bigger than you do if you do it, what we call from the front. So the area you would have to dissect is about 3 times bigger, and the volume is about 9 times bigger. So actually, it's not a small operation, but it does come through smaller scars. But if you add them all up, it's not far short of a single scar. And again, medicine is very bad at trying to make things clear to people because everybody will have their own particular technique, which, you know, they'll say this is the way to do it. As I say, I'm quite happy to admit there are different ways of doing it. Different ways suit different people. And most people will be absolutely fine whichever way you have it done.
That's interesting what you say about explaining, because if, from my point of view, keyhole surgery, that's got to be the one to go for. You know, less mess, less blood. It's got to be quicker and easier and you recover faster, but that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, it's not
more questions.
No, it's not necessarily true. And there's actually a little article in the Royal College of Surgeons Journal last year from Jonathan Glass, who's one of the consultants in London, who actually said laparoscopic hernia repair has come and to all intents and purposes gone. Because again, none of the things that Sol was doing are actually true. When I talk to people, some slides that show the complications of different types of hernia repair. And interestingly, obviously, you know, I've got a slide of all the complications of the open hernia repair. And then we talk about the complications of laparoscopic hernia repair. And interestingly, it's the same slide to start with, but then there are 5 others of all the complications you can get with laparoscopic surgery that you don't get with open surgery. They're all hugely rare. But as we've said, if you get a rare complication, it's not rare if you get it. And that's the trouble. But again, I'll emphasise, whichever way you have it done, most people are fine.
Let me ask a slightly cheeky question. How many have you fixed?
Oh, Lord. Do you know, I'm delighted I've lost count. I mean, it's in the thousands. I've just lost count. Simple as that.
So there are a lot of mostly men that are very grateful to you.
Yes, but if you'll forgive the phrase, I do women as well. Not that that sounds right, but I do see women. And in women, I've never used meshes because the anatomy of women is different. They don't have a large hole. I don't think you ever need a mesh in a woman. You can do it all anatomically.
All right. So closing up now, the whole idea of a hernia is it's a slightly taboo subject. And we said it's not because if you get a hernia, you're a particularly weak individual or anything. So some people are a bit reticent to talk about hernias or show a hernia to their doctor. Is that still the case, do you think?
Yeah, do you know, I think it is. I think as men, we're just really bad at looking after ourselves. And I would contrast that with the other half of my job, which is helping ladies with breast cancer. Ladies are really good at getting checked, reporting symptoms, making sure they're okay, not worrying about seeing doctors. And most ladies I see are absolutely fine, which is brilliant. I think as men, we're just really bad. You know, you've got a lump and it's a bit down below near the private area and that's embarrassing. And maybe if you wait, it'll just go away and it's not causing any problems and then we'll wait and see. And it's the same again, you know, you talk about men and prostate problems and the King's been very good about mentioning his prostate problem. So maybe that's helped. But I just think we're really bad at looking after ourselves and we just hope it's going to go away. But we do. We need to take more control of our health and get things sorted out and fixed. And that's what we can do here for you. So we've got the whole team down at 108 High Street. We can cover anything anybody wants.
Right. So if people have been listening to this men in particular, but it might be women, and think, oh, actually, do you know what? This is a bit funny. I wonder what that is. Perhaps that's what he's been talking about. What's your advice?
I think tomorrow,
what are they going to do?
Yeah, the first thing to do is obviously go and see a GP and see what they think. There's an obvious lump, that's fine. If you want to come and see us here, of course you can. You can give us a ring and we'll book you in and see. No problem at all. Very straightforward.
And if people want a source for some more information about the sort of thing we've been talking about, can you recommend a good place for people to go and find out some more information?
Well, obviously, I'm going to recommend the 108 Harley Street website. Lots of information on there, but you'll find lots of information everywhere. The NHS has information on hernias as well. Lots of places to look. What you will very quickly find, as we've sort of discussed, is you might get different opinions from different websites. It'd be very hard to work out what's right or wrong. And part of the answer to that is that there isn't a right or wrong. They're just different ways of doing things. And it's a matter of sorting out what you feel is going to be right for you.
Okay. All right. Look, very good advice. Thank you so much for spending a few minutes to talk about that. It's much appreciated. So, Mr. Simon Marsh, thank you very much indeed.
Mark, thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
My next guest is Suman, and she's an artist, a poet, and a storyteller. And I started off really with a bit of a gossip, because actually I've known Suman for a long, long time. And so we just started having a bit of a chat, really.
And actually, Suman, I've known you for years, because our children went to the same childminder, and that was probably like 16 or 17 years ago.
It was a long time ago, Mike. Yeah.
And then there was a gap of several years, and we bumped into each other at the Malting Shopping Centre in St Albans, didn't we?
We did. We bumped into each other, I think it was four times on the same day. So I think we just decided that we had to do this recording.
I think that's right. And so a lot's been happening. So you have recently started a movement. I don't think that's too lesser term for it, or too strong a term for it, rather, a movement, and it's called Third Space Stories, and there's lots of stuff happening within that. So maybe the best thing to do is just to get you to describe what that is and why it came about.
But well, it's quite interesting, because I have been completely taken aback and also bowled over by what's happened with this project. And so the way that it came about was that I started writing poetry during the pandemic. I had a rather horrible incident, and I hadn't written poetry for 44 years. But I had this poem that was going round and round in my head, and I was really trying to write it. And then someone was really not very pleasant to me on Facebook about a piece of Indian history, you know, about South Asian history that I spoke about. I spoke about the Bengal famine, and right, they accused me of not telling the truth, of being posting counterculture crap. And I was really taken aback, because I'd known this person quite a long time. But what was most difficult about that whole situation for me was that a lot of people saw it, and nobody stepped up except for my older sister. And that was quite shocking. And so for a while I stopped going to my studio, because a lot of the other artists saw this as well, and they didn't step up either. And then I spoke to my mentor about it, and I hadn't known him for very long. And he was kind of the same demographic as the person who had done this. And he'd been away. He came back and he said to me, "How have you been while I've been away?" And I had this moment of complete hesitation about whether to tell him, because, you know, we got on really well. And like a lot of South Asian people, or like a lot of people who are from somewhere else, we've all had that occasion when we've spoken about stuff that's happened to us And then people have either told us we've got a chip on the shoulder, we're making too much of it, or whatever. Anyway, his immediate reaction was fantastic. He just said, "I can't believe you've been bullied in this way. What are you going to do about it?" And I said, "Nothing, because I'm tired of sticking my head above the parapet." And he said, honestly, every time I repeat this, I feel like crying, because what he said was, "You don't have to do anything. I will do it for you." And there's no hesitation. He didn't ask me anything else. He's a really busy man. I'm not going to say who he is because he doesn't like me to, but he's a really busy man. And honestly, Mike, I feel as if that was such a healing conversation with me, because what's really interesting is the day after that conversation, I wrote my first poem in 44 years. And it just came out whole.
Okay, so it released some floodgates.
It unblocked something, you know. I feel as if, I mean, I've written a poem about him and just say, you know, layers of pain dispersed by six words. I had not known the weight of it until you took my burden. And that's actually pretty much how it felt. And the poetry has become such an important part of my practice. It's an amazing way of communicating with people, of telling stories. Because I'd always wanted to talk about my family history, but I didn't actually want to write a book. And what I've discovered is, with poetry, it works like small conversations, like the conversations you have with your family about something that's happened, because they're short. You know, it's not a whole book, is it? It's just a conversation. So the poem, poems quite often are a little conversation that I've had
with every discussion, well, pretty much every discussion you have, well, with anyone, but certainly with family, it's like sitting down to breakfast, and there's no time for a book. So yeah, it is a poem, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And so a lot of my personal poetry is about things that happened to me when I was younger, about things, about my family story. A lot of my stuff is about partition. A lot of my stuff is about the difficulties that my parents faced because they were displaced by partition. Mum was 12, dad was 18. Obviously, they didn't know each other then. They came here 18 years later. And in the 60s and 70s and 80s, you know, racism was very overt. And they, you know, they faced a lot. They struggled, but they were amazing. They were, you know, like so many people who come here from another country, like so many people who have families from anywhere. They worked so hard to support us and make sure we got a good education. And they overcame a huge amount. And it feels good to be able to tell their story. And also, you know, this platform has created a space for other people to tell their stories.
Right. Okay. So let's fast forward a little bit. You had a difficult time. You had kind of an unblockage, which has led to kind of, if you like, a feast of creativity of all sorts of different things. And you've channeled that, haven't you, into this third space stories. So tell us a bit about that.
Well, there's a philosopher, I can't remember which century, but there's a philosopher called Rumi, and he wrote a line that I think is so beautiful. It underlies all my work now, I think, which is, it's through the wound that the light enters.
Okay.
And that is my poetry, is the light that came from that wound. So I've created this platform. I felt, as a South Asian person, I would quite often go on poetry courses or workshops or go to readings, and I would be the only brown face. And a lot of poets, and you know, South Asian poets that I've spoken to have also had that experience. So I felt it would be nice to create a platform for us. So I applied to the Arts Council for the money, and to my great surprise, I got it. And the sad thing is, I got it just 3 days. I heard about 3 days before my mum got really seriously ill. I heard that I had the money. So it's been a bittersweet period for me, mm-hmm. because she was then ill for 5 weeks, but I'd got this money for this project, which was really important. And so many people were writing to me and saying, you know, thank God you've done this. This is great. I was thinking of doing this myself. Now you've done it for us. And it kind of, I don't know, I don't make too much of it. It feels like a real privilege that I can do this. I'm very, and I'm working with a publisher because we're, what I'm going to say to him, say about him is he's been the most extraordinary person, Will Daisy of Renard Press. He's been the most extraordinary person to work with. And very early on, he said, this project has a magical light. May it infuse and enthuse everything. And it kind of has.
Okay. So the project essentially is getting South Asian poets to submit their work and create an anthology. Is that in a nutshell the project?
That's only one small part. That's one small part of it. We've got the anthology now. The anthology was done by open submission. We had well over 200 entries, and we've 50 were selected by 4 judges.
That sounds quite a difficult task.
I think they found it incredibly difficult. They all said the standard of the poetry was so high. They were just bowled over. And so were Will, the publisher, and I. And in fact, what Will said was, since we were only able to publish a quarter of the submissions, that if some of the poets wanted, he would put it onto the website that we've created. So there is a page with some of the poems that weren't published.
Okay. So
the website's called thirdspacestories.com.
All right. And so, well, it sounds like there might be an opportunity for another book published, you know, anthology 2 or 3 or 4, you know.
In the plan.
Why stop at one?
Yeah, no, it's in the plan, seriously. Because what's happened, actually, I'm going to tell you about this, and I'm going to tell you there are workshops as well, but I'll tell you what's happened now is that I didn't want this just to be based in the south of England. So there is an event happening at the Portico Library in Manchester in October. People are very welcome to get, you know, in touch with me to find out about that. And I was speaking to...
Just outline what it is now. What that event is.
The event in Manchester is actually another celebration of the book. And there will be poetry readings by South Asian poets who are based in the north. Okay. In the northwest, so yeah. But, and I was and it's at the Portico Library, which is a really interesting venue because it used to be a gentleman's library. So there'd be all these gentlemen with their cigars who, you know, owned all the mills and everything, reading their books, drinking their brandy. And so we're going to be doing our reading and selling the book there. So okay. That's going to be great.
Excellent.
And so then I was having a conversation with another poet, Dev Jani, and she's in the Midlands. We had a huge number of submissions from the Midlands because I think partly because two of the judges, there's a huge number of South Asian poets and artists in the Midlands. But we had two judges who are from the Midlands, Fahana Sheikh, who runs Dahlia Books, and also Nav Kiran Korman, and she's a poet and tutor who poetry tutor who lives up there. And I said to Dev Jani, I'd love to do something in the Midlands as well. And she said, leave it with me. And then she just got me in touch with Coventry Cathedral, who say they want us to do an event there on the 14th or 15th of August next year. And we're now trying to raise the money so that we can produce another anthology, which we can launch then.
Okay, right. So what I said, partially tongue-in-cheek, is actually going to happen. Fantastic.
It's going to happen.
Yeah. The first book, the first anthology, that is being launched very soon, I gather.
Yeah, it's going to be, it's already out. So if you want to order it, if anyone wants to order it, they can go to Renard Press and order it there. It's going to be launched at St. Albans Museum this Friday in an event that's actually now sold out. But it's going to be in the bookshop. And as well as having the anthology there, we're also going to be running. There are tutors coming who are all very experienced tutors, South Asian tutors, who are running poetry workshops. And the poetry workshops are for everybody. And right. They're based on the South Asia Heritage Month theme this year, which is Free to Be Me.
And so the poetry workshops, they're very well subscribed as well. Are they full now? Yeah,
there are still spaces.
Okay.
You can go on the website and have a look. So there are still spaces. And I think we're going to create a waiting list for that as well.
Okay. So are those workshops online or face-to-face?
They're in person. They're in the museum. And okay. So that's going to be great. There's a family one.
So I'll just interrupt and say, when you say in the museum, that's in St. Albans. So if people are listening to this, that's in St. Albans. This goes out. Well, actually, this goes out all over the world.
There are some in St. Albans Museum. There are some in Harlow as well. So St. Albans is where I live, and Harlow is where my studio is.
Okay.
And there's some at the Gibbard Gallery, and they're all in person.
Okay. And if people are listening to this, and that is actually too far away for them, or, you know, I've got listeners all over the world, the website, that has information on, but there are no online workshops, or is that planning to happen as well?
Of course. No, it's planning to happen. We've already, in preparation for the launch for the submissions, we had two online workshops, so people could actually work with the prompt and see what they came up with. And the prompts for those workshops are actually on the Third Space Stories website if anybody wants to work with them.
Okay.
But we are also planning to have two online workshops later on this year that will be advertised. Obviously, because I said earlier on that my mum had been ill, but unfortunately she died on April the 8th. And I've kind of haven't really had the mental capacity to think about the online workshops, but they're definitely in the pipeline for sure.
Okay. All right. So if people are listening to this and can't make it to Harlow or wherever the events are happening, or even Manchester next year, there are other things they can do to get involved. And at this point, actually, I'd like to ask you a little bit about how writing and poetry has helped you at the minute, because you just kind of alluded, you've had one hell of a few months with your mum passing away, your mum being ill, and other stuff going on. Now, the fact that you have this focus as a poet and a storyteller, has that been good for you? Has that helped you? And is that kind of a theme, do you think, that goes through a lot of the poets you come across?
It's been incredibly helpful, actually. I mean, I think poetry is a great way of processing things and explaining how you feel about things. And a lot of the poets I've spoken to have used it like that. And a lot of the poems that have been submitted to Third Space Stories, people talk about their experiences and how they feel. And the title Third Space Stories comes from an essay by Homi K. Bhabha, and he was an academic who wrote about identity and culture. And he coined the term third space, which is about it's like an in-between space where you don't quite belong anywhere, even though you're living somewhere. I've got a poem that explains it, which I could quickly read to you.
Do, yes, that would be lovely. Please do something.
Hang on a second. I will just find it. Mm-hmm. I won't be a sec. In fact, it's on the cover of the book.
Okay.
Which Will sent to me yesterday. So this poem is called Here or Third Space. My parents took me from where I was born across the deep waters. And I'm here now in the doorway, neither in one place nor the other, standing in the nowhere space, the third space, the in-between space, reserved for all of us from somewhere else. even though we are here now.
Very good. Now, I think that probably is a perfect place to leave the discussion, really, because it's hard to trump that, really. But I think maybe what I'll ask you to do is just one more time, give the website that anybody who's interested, well, in poetry at all, but certainly poetry of this genre, this nature, can go to the website and have a look.
Yes, the website is thirdspacestories.com. Excellent. And my social media handle is Printmaker Lady, and that's on Instagram. So you can find me on Instagram that way.
Printmaker Lady, yeah.
Printmaker Lady. And the book is published by Renard Press, and the link is there. But you can also click on the link on my Instagram to buy the book as well.
All right. Suman, thank you very much indeed for chatting. Absolutely fascinating. And I hope the launch, the book launch, and all the other stuff you've organised goes fantastically well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to both my guests this week. They were Mr. Simon Marsh, consultant surgeon, talking about hernias, and Suman Gujral, artist, poet, and storyteller, talking about the third space that she has created. Thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.